Call the answer line where you're the head honcho, the big cheese, top dog, big man, mighty boss. And you can tell us exactly where to go.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
By shortwave, cable, and satellite, this is the Dutch International Service, Radio Netherlands.
Media network. Tutto ciò che volete sapere su telecomunicazioni media e che non avete mai osato chiedere.
I don't think that's the regular theme tune. Not that it really matters, because this programme doesn't really have one. The key to continued success is the element of surprise. At least, that's what it says on this piece of paper. Greetings to Larry Greenfield, who says he's a classical violinist, and posted a note last week on the internet bulletin board system asking if Media Network is still going. Yes, we're weekly proof that something's happened in the world of media. Chuck Yarbrough, who works at the Department of Communication Arts at Georgia's Southern University, says he's trying to research how shortwave radio is used in various levels of education. He's interested to hear from both students and teachers who use shortwave in the classroom. Well, if you're keen on contacting Chuck, then drop us a line to Media Network. We'll pass your letter on. Please mark your letter or card, though, shortwave in the classroom. And on the subject of response, we've been delighted with a stream of faxes and phone calls since the start of our relays via the Commonwealth of Independent States. More on that a little later on. Sometimes we get reception reports from listeners who've clearly heard the programme, but note a very strange frequency like 14600 kHz. We usually put that down to a mixing product in the listener's receiver. Remember, all the audible signals in the world are arriving at the antenna input. So sometimes simple radios have a more difficult job picking the one you want to hear and rejecting the rest. On the other hand, sometimes you can hear stations on odd channels because of an imperfection at the transmitter site. There's still a dedicated circle of listeners who double the known frequency of the station they're trying to hear and then check for the so-called harmonic. Adrian Peterson reports that while in Costa Rica last week, he heard a station operating on 2968 kHz, but he's not convinced it's a harmonic.
It does sound like a harmonic, and there are a lot of harmonics that I heard. For example, 2100 is La Voz de las Cuchumatanas in Huehuetenango in Guatemala, 1050 times 2. And 2560 is Radio Alajuela in Costa Rica, 2 kilowatt, 1280. And 2960 was Radio Punta Arenas in Costa Rica on 1480. All very, very clear harmonics. However, the one on 2968, though it could be a harmonic, this would indicate a very unusual fundamental frequency, a station off channel. But the longer I listened down there, Jonathan, the more I began to realize that maybe this is indeed a station actually broadcasting on that channel.
Why would they broadcast there? Because, I mean, would people be able to pick it up?
Well, I discovered, Jonathan, while I was in the area, that there are a lot of stations broadcasting on the tropical shortwave bands, lower frequency and higher frequency within the tropical shortwave bands and sometimes between. Like, for example, Radio Santa Rosa in Bolivia comes through very clearly on 4420, morning and evening. 4485 in Peru, I heard that very clearly. Two stations listed. I don't know which one was which, but it was there. But the reason why I think 2968 is proving to be a fundamental frequency, and though it first sounded as though it might be somewhere in Mexico or Guatemala, our indication now seems to suggest that it is actually located in Ecuador up towards the border in Peru. The time zone they are giving, or the time call, is GMT-5. They mentioned San Francisco, obviously not California, and also Cuzco. And when they closed, my friend, who had lived in Peru, said it is not the Peruvian national anthem, but rather it sounded to be like the Ecuadorian national anthem.
But obviously they didn't give a station identification.
They gave a few identification announcements, Jonathan, always with the word studio in front of it, which is rather unusual for stations in Latin, in that part of Latin America. When I did hear a call, it sounded like Radio Munio or Radio Munideria. Very difficult to get, and I'm not sure.
So, more detective work to be done. Adrian was in Costa Rica to look at the expansion plans for the Seventh-day Adventist station there, currently under test.
When the new facility comes on the air at Cahuita on the Atlantic coast, this will be a very large station. There are five large transmitters, all on shortwave, located over there, and these are being put onto the air stage by stage. There's two or three on the air testing at the present time on low power and then going into higher power. They are finishing off some of the antennas. I was there also looking at the studio to transmitter links. They are being finalized.
You say that there are test transmissions going on at the moment. I mean, would they reach outside Costa Rica?
Yes, certainly. You see, they are transmitters of 20, 40, and 50 kilowatt, and the channel that can be heard best at present is 9722.5, which will soon be changed to 9725. 13750 is being put onto the air.
So these frequencies are testing at the moment, presumably during the daylight hours?
Daylight, morning, and evening also.
Right, so the frequencies again, 9725 and 13750.
Yes, they are the current ones that are mostly being activated.
Okay, you mentioned that transmitter base there on the Atlantic coast, but where are the studios located?
Okay, Jonathan, the studios are located at the Adventist University in Alajuela, which is almost a twin city with San Jose. Now, there is a new studio building which has just been procured a few miles away, and the station will move into those studios progressively, I guess in about 6 months' time. But there is also a transmitter at this location, a 5-kilowatt unit on 11870 kilohertz, 11870. That transmitter will be moved to another site, not in Costa Rica, but rather in Guatemala. Guatemala Adventist World Radio can be heard currently on 5980 with a 10-kilowatt unit radiating about 3 kilowatt. And the additional 5 kilowatt will go into operation there within a month or two. So anybody who is wanting to hear the Alajuela shortwave base ought to listen fairly soon and get the Curacao before the transmitter is closed there and removed to the new country in Guatemala.
What times do you suggest?
The best time for 11870, again, is morning or evening. And likewise, 5980 is best morning and evening. That is according to Costa Rica time.
Well, Adventist World Radio is expanding its shortwave coverage, but the Voice of America recently reduced its shortwave output to Latin America. Niels Lindquist, who's chief of the Brazilian branch at VOA, has been explaining to me that in order to survive, their team of 13 people created new outlets for a service which originally was going to be discontinued back in 1987. For many hours of the day, on the half hour, the VOA Brazilian service provides a newscast for hundreds of stations in Brazil.
Atenção emissoras, a partir de agora o boletim via satélite das 17h30, preparado em Washington pelo Serviço Brasileiro da Voz da América. 5, 4, 3, 2, último top, 1.
Our service begins at 0930 UTC and goes all the way up to 2300 UTC. We're on the satellite every hour on the half hour with a variety of news and information packages.
So actually, you're putting out more than you ever did on shortwave.
That's correct. We just put together what we call a productivity report, which is an annual exercise in futility for our government budget people. And actually, we came up with the fact that we're doing about 3 hours a day on satellite, plus our 1 hour a day shortwave output, which is also on satellite. But actually, we're 3-1 right now.
When you have your own transmitter, you can say what you like. But isn't it hard for a U.S. government broadcaster to work with commercial networks like Bandeirantes or the Globo or CBN network?
I think that VOA has made quite a name for itself in Latin America. I won't speak for other parts of the world because I don't know them. But in Latin America, I think VOA has become known as a rather, more than a rather, but a very reliable and objective news and information organization. Election night, we found that, we did 5.5 hours on satellite only for the first time in the 31 years the Brazilian branch has been on the air. We did not do one of these all-night marathons on shortwave. It was a tough decision to make. One network provided us with 145 stations, another network with 22 stations. And we are very client-oriented. If we can do whatever the client requests, and as long as it's within our charter, our mandate, we are more than happy. We will bend over backwards to do it.
Well, that charter is fairly vague, isn't it, or is it specific?
I guess everyone has their own interpretation of it. And as long as you remain objective, as long as you explore and talk about America as a whole and not any individual group, I think you can accomplish your purpose. Right now, we bring in two individuals at 1:30 in the morning, Washington time, to prepare a 15-minute news program for one station in Brasilia that goes on the air at 5 o'clock in the morning. That's a big drag on our short resources. But the thing is that one station in Brasilia probably has a rather small audience of 50,000, but it's the cream of the crop.
VOA's Brazilian branch is audible on a separate subcarrier on the WorldNet TV network. It's heard on Intelsat 6, transponder 14.
We have two projects underway right now, one with the University of São Paulo, where VOA has provided a grant for the installation of a U.S.-manufactured and maintained dish at a tremendous cost of about $35,000. On the other hand, we have a project going in Brasilia with Super Radio FM, which is our best affiliate in the country, where we have gone locally through a local Brazilian contractor, manufacturer. We're doing the same project for about 12.5, basically a 4-meter dish.
Finally, then, what about the shortwave? Are you going to switch it off?
It's being talked about. What I would love to do, basically, and speaking for myself and not for the organization, is to turn off the shortwave. Give me the savings and the transmitter money and let me buy satellite dishes or apply that towards some type of new technology. Yes, governments can change in your target area, but I think, too, that with the proliferation of international broadcasters, and we're not the only ones in Brazil, the BBC tries to do a few things. We still like to think that we're way out ahead of everybody else. With so much international broadcasting in a country that has right now, for example, in the case of Brazil, of extremely open media, it would be very, very difficult for any government at this point to come into Brazil and come back with the strong, strong censorship that we saw in the 60s and 70s. Yes, if once you turn off the shortwave, you'd have a hard time getting your audience back. But we had some interesting people here from the Globo Group a couple of months ago, and Globo for years has maintained very strong 250,000-watt basically domestic shortwave systems. They turned those transmitters off 3 months ago and have yet to receive one letter of complaint. So I think that says something. You've got 3,000 commercial radio stations in Brazil. That's our audience. That's our target.
Niels Lindquist.
Media Network, first with the news on the world of radio.
Back to Adrian Peterson and the shortwave growth market. There's another new station in Costa Rica nearing completion.
There is another station there, Faro del Caribe, which means Lighthouse of the Caribbean. This is a gospel and cultural station which is operating 5 transmitters, AM, FM, and shortwave. They have a new facility almost completed on the edge of the Costa Rican capital city area, and that will be put into operation around about May this year. It seems to me, Jonathan, that the shortwave services in Central America are not quite as reliable as they are in other parts of the world. This is due to various reasons. Sometimes the electricity is a problem. They also have problems and difficulties regarding spare parts.
But Adrian's analysis of AWR's feedback is enough to convince him there is a shortwave audience.
But you see, these areas of Central America are very rugged and very hilly. And because of this, there are shadow areas for FM transmissions and also AM transmissions. And so the shortwave is used to fill in. Now, on the Atlantic coast, when I was listening there, shortwave fills in where there is no FM or AM quite readily available.
So, two approaches to international broadcasting there. A while back, I mentioned there were plans to revive one of the world's lowest power shortwave stations, CKFX in Vancouver, Canada, listed on 6080 kHz with no less than 10 watts. The shortwave transmitter normally relays the country music programs of the local station CKWX right round the clock. Jack Weeb, chief engineer at CKWX, explained the origins of the shortwave service go back to the mid-1940s.
In those days, there were no private broadcast stations located in those small fishing villages and communities, and the idea was to provide, under short skip conditions, a 49-meter band signal for those fishing villages up and down the coast of British Columbia.
Now, the reason for being on the air is mainly to serve enthusiasts.
We're very much aware that there are DXers out there listening to for low-power broadcast stations, consider it a plum to get a QSL from CKFX. So the idea is to, if it doesn't cost a lot of money, to keep it going.
But the CKFX signal has been missing for some time.
Yes, for the past year, because the original transmitter was not repairable. We're waiting for a decision from management as to did they want to spend any money or did they not. They apparently didn't. So we have purchased another transmitter, a used one, that I am in the process of rebuilding for use on CKFX. And it's about 30 days away from completion.
So when the transmitter is back on the air, how far will the signal reach?
Currently we're in the dipping towards the minimum sunspot cycle, but during the sunspot cycle peaks, we have received QSL requests from literally all over the world, including Europe, Scandinavia is fairly frequently, Oceania, Australia, New Zealand, and certainly many from North America.
With what sort of antenna?
The original antenna of CKFX was a two quarter-wave vertical array. The current antenna is a single vertical array.
So now we know. Three other items in brief. Radio Bosnia-Herzegovina's return to medium wave on 612 kHz. BBC Monitoring has noted that the English broadcasts from Azerbaijan Radio at 17 hours UTC have moved to 9840 kHz, 9840, but now they're blocked by the Voice of Vietnam. And here in Europe, CNN, the news channel, has started a teletext service. Welcome now to Tim Matthews in Nara, Japan, who says he gets excellent reception there on 7260 kHz at the due timing of 10:30 UTC. That's one of the transmissions from Radio Netherlands via transmitters in the Commonwealth of Independent States. Several callers to our answer line want to know how we get our signal to Moscow. So for that story, let me take you upstairs to a room on the first floor of the Radio Netherlands building. Right, I've come into a very small measuring and testing room that's also used to control our flavour transmitter site with Ms. Gijs Papert, who's head of engineering here at Radio Netherlands. Gijs, as far as the signal is concerned to Moscow, how does it go? It leaves the building. I know it doesn't go up to the roof like the Pan Amsat service.
It leaves the building of Radio Netherlands and is by an audio connection to an uplink station of the Dutch PTT not far away from here, about 6 miles away from here. It's uplinked from there to a Eutelsat 2 Flight 4 satellite at 13 degrees east in the in transponder 22, the so-called superbeam, which does not have really an optimum coverage for Eastern Europe, but we hope to have sufficient signal in Moscow to have a good reception of this digital carrier.
In fact, it's important that we talk about digital because I know that many people in Western Europe have satellite dishes capable of picking up even that satellite, but not this signal.
No, the signal is strong enough to be picked up by such a small dish, but it is in such a way that it is not a subcarrier of a TV signal, but it is a separate carrier, all digitally modulated, and you need a special receiver to be able to receive that.
So basically what we've created is a point-to-multipoint system, if necessary.
In principle, it's a point-to-multipoint system. However, the receivers are complicated and are indeed quite expensive for a private individual to be purchased, but not so expensive that, say, even small cable networks would not be able to purchase one receiver if they are really interested in the signal.
Right, most receivers that I'm used to have a tuning knob, volume control, AF gain, things like that. In front of us is a Comstream audio broadcast receiver, ABR200, something we won't be reviewing in Media Network simply because it's got nothing on it at all, no knobs or anything.
There is no knobs on front in front of the receiver, not even in the inside of the receiver you'll find any knobs or anything to twist or twiddle. The whole thing is programmed by means of a computer. All the parameters for the reception of that particular carrier are brought into it by means of a communications program, and then the receiver will search automatically and follow that particular carrier to which it is tuned.
Now, why are we using this system as opposed to, indeed, the sub-carrier system which other broadcasters like the BBC or whatever are using in Europe?
One of the main advantages is that this system allows you to do uplinking from any position somewhere in Western Europe, whereas a subcarrier signal first has to be assembled in a central place with a TV and all its audio carriers to be brought together in one place, for which the transmission cost from a point of where the radio studio is to the particular place where the signal is assembled might be higher than the total transmission cost on the satellite. So the advantage of this system is that you have an individual carrier, that the carrier is digital, that means you need the least possible amount of power and bandwidth in the satellite to be giving a good signal reception over the whole of Europe.
Right, when we're serving Western Europe, we use powers in the region of 250, sometimes 500 kilowatts, which is switchable at our flavor transmitter site. What sort of powers are we talking about here? Milliwatts?
We talk about powers of, say, between 300 and 500 milliwatts to be uplinking just one audio carrier.
And it goes up on one frequency and comes down on another? Is that the way it works?
Yes, it goes up in the frequency around 14 gigahertz, and it is downlinked on a frequency which is 3,300 megahertz, lower than that.
So what sort of fidelity were you putting to Moscow?
We put in to Moscow at the moment for 64 kilobits QPSK. We expect to put in a bandwidth of 8 kilohertz.
Which is more than enough for shortwave.
More than enough for shortwave.
The special receivers cost around $2,000, incidentally. But a special QSL card for a correct reception report on the new CIS relays is free. The special cards, though, will be printed in the middle of February, so please bear with us. Joining me now is Victor Gunatilaka on the line from Sri Lanka. Victor, what's reception of 7305 and 12025 kilohertz like with you in the mornings?
Well, the 7 megahertz frequency has been providing us very good reception, but for the first couple of minutes, propagation has not been very favorable. But after about 10 minutes, the station builds up in strength and we are getting very good reception on 7 megahertz. And on 12 megahertz, right through from start itself, we are having excellent reception. So we are very happy to have the backup to Madagascar on 7 and 12 megahertz.
And I guess the 0930 UTC release is somewhat late for you.
Well, yes, it comes almost a few hours after noon here, and at that time the low frequencies don't propagate too well to us, although we have been hearing it rather weak.
Right, a little while back on the program we were talking about Radio Iraq International and the fact that its English service was somewhat erratic. It seems that of all the services that Baghdad puts out, the service to South Asia is the one that pops up on a regular basis.
We are rather surprised, but we have been getting very steady and regular reception from 1400 to 1700 UTC on 15250 kilohertz with an English broadcast, and the station announces that this broadcast is beamed to India and Pakistan. And once again, the time, 1400 to 1700 UTC, English, on on 15250 kilohertz.
This is Baghdad, Radio Iraq International.
And what about the Arabic broadcasts from Baghdad?
There's a small change there. After trying two or three frequencies in the 60-meter band, they've gone back to 4605 kilohertz. We hear the station fading in around 14 hours UTC and going right up to midnight 35 sign-off. The frequency once again for this Arabic service, 4605.
Now, what about the clandestine station, The Voice of Democratic Burma? They've hired airtime on Radio Norway International. I understand they've moved channels again.
Well, yes, from 15140 kilohertz, they've changed to 15180 kilohertz. That's 15180 for their transmission in Burmese, 1430 to 1530 UTC. Well, it was quite easy for me to find the station because the jammers are very much easier to identify because it's so much different from any other jamming we've been hearing on there. So find the jammers and you find Voice of Democratic Burma.
Do you think the jamming then is effective?
Here in Sri Lanka, the jamming is effective to a certain extent, but certainly not enough to spoil the intelligibility of the programming. They play a lot of music and very soft-spoken programming in addition to occasional political commentaries. So it's something like a domestic service from a different point of view.
Okay, what's next?
Talking about clandestines, Voice of Independent Kashmir has also moved frequencies, and the new frequency, 4115 kilohertz, that's 4115 kilohertz, which is a move from 4080 kilohertz. Reception is fair here in Sri Lanka, 1530 to 1630 UTC, and we heard an English political commentary on the 2nd of February from 1530 to 1600, including a station identification as Voice of Independent Kashmir in English.
That's quite unusual, then. They don't normally broadcast in English.
No, not at all. But recently, we have been observing more frequent English political commentaries on their broadcast.
And what about KHBI on Saipan? They've been doing some engineering work, haven't they?
Oh, yes. The first 3 weeks of 1993, KHBI, which is the Christian Science Monitor Station in Saipan, they were off the air for maintenance work, and they came back on the air with a much improved signal. Reception is excellent here in Sri Lanka, midnight to 2 hours UTC on 17555, and on another frequency, 1600 to 1800 on 11580.
Back soon. Bye for now.
Copyright 1993. And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.